Moncrief on News Talk.
Are younger people today riddled with self-doubt, anxiety and fear of causing offence? And if so, why? This is something the Irish Times columnist Joe Humphreys has been pondering. Good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So why do you think it is?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a phenomenon that's been observed by many people. The American psychologist Jonathan Haidt has famously written a book around this recently, which has caused a lot of attention, why Gen Z are seemingly the most anxious generation. I guess you have to interrogate the figures to some degree, because they're maybe more willing to talk about mental health than previous generations, which is a positive thing. But there are indications that there's kind of reasons why people are more anxious, younger people are more anxious than past generations. Some of it to do with parenting is to blame, kind of the helicopter parenting that's kind of inhibited kind of youth's, you know, the opportunity for that generation to kind of make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. Some have been blamed on smartphones. But one of the things definitely, and I was kind of exploring that piece, was around a fear of causing offence and a kind of fear of, I suppose, any mistakes being magnified, particularly on social media and through being shamed or being the subject of a pile-on on social media and on your smartphone. So it's actually, funny enough, was my own college-going daughter came up with the concept, or she mentioned to me, because she did a school project of this fear of causing offence. I'm not sure if she coined the phrase FOCO, but it was it was that kind of idea that definitely was circulating among her generation. And I think, you know, others have spoken about this, that people self-censoring a lot in that age group. And it's not just in that age group, but certainly feeling a need to, you know, check what you're saying a lot of the time, you know, holding back in case you're likely to offend someone. And I guess there's different reasons for that, or different theories as to why that is so heightened now. Some of this is, I suppose, a cultural change. Postmodernism gets blamed a bit here, because there's been a sort of a change in the way, you know, we understand the difference between speech and action. You know, that old phrase about sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And that idea that words were very different from actions, you know, is the old way maybe of thinking about words, that, you know, speech just is a different category of thing. And in more recent years, there's been a kind of an argument that's gained hold that speech is an act itself. So people talk about speech acts and go further than that, talking about speech as a form maybe even of oppression, or speech as a form of violence. So I guess that has possibly been a contribution to why speech acts themselves have become much more, if you like, a higher stakes thing, that, you know, you're by causing offence with a speech act now, potentially the costs are greater than they would have been for past generations.
Yeah, but, well, I suppose maybe speaking something, but putting something on social media, because even if you delete it, it seems to be, you know, someone's going to take a screen grab of it, and I know it strikes me there's a process in social media where everyone is reduced down to one statement. And if you say one thing somebody finds unacceptable, that's the person you are. You're fixed in aspect in that statement forever.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is it. And I mean, it's I think that the high cost, you think of one of the, not necessarily a speech act in this case, but you think of one of the big stories of the summer was the Coldplay gate, you know, one act, the couple they were caught embracing at the Coldplay concert. And immediately, you know, one mistake, if you like, assuming it was a mistake in their case, you know, became amplified and became an international story. You know, that's obviously something past generations haven't had to deal with. I think as well there's a, you know, and this applies to every generation, if you like. You know, what massively plays in our minds is not only kind of saying something off or making a mistake, but then how that's perceived among your peer group, and you know, the fear of somehow saying something that your peer group disapproves of is weighs heavily, and that's it's hard to break out of that. And I guess one of the things I was writing about that piece was a kind of an inspiration. Kind of when I was in college, I remember reading a portrait of an artist as a young man, James Joyce's famous novel, where he was writing about his own experience. And in a sense, he kind of addressed that experience for a previous generation. You know, you're afraid of making a mistake or being seen as a fool among your peers. And, you know, he has this conversation with one of his peers and says, you know, I'm not afraid to make a mistake, a great mistake, a lifelong mistake. And he's almost saying it out loud, while I think a lot of us bottle up that, you know, we're very anxious because we're afraid that we're going to be seen as somehow foolish or, you know, fall in the eyes of our peers. And the reaction of our peers can be very unpredictable. So,
Joe, have we culturally lost the ability to allow ourselves and each other to make mistakes? And have we lost the idea that people learn from their mistakes?
I think that's part of what we need to think about, because, like, we are quite judgmental. I mean, you and I are in the media, and it's a very judgy business. And Paul possibly have to kind of reflect on this as well, because, you know, people that make mistakes in the public domain, they get amplified and you know, sometimes out of proportion. I mean, let's take the Owen Hayes case this week. You know, that's something that, again, previous generations never have to deal with. You know, placing a context around that, or other people that make small mistakes or relatively small mistakes, you know, how far do you go in terms of criticizing them or leaving it hanging over them? I think, like, for people who are, like, if you say the grown-ups, people, you know, beyond the Gen Z generation, like, you know, we probably have to check ourselves in terms of our judgmentalism, like, kind of, you know, I think create an atmosphere where people are free to make mistakes, especially when they're younger. I mean, you know, when you're in college, or, you know, you speak in at a public debate, or you're testing out different opinions, you know, people should be free to test them out. It's not necessarily going to be their final opinion. And people, maybe when they're older, should be more held, you know, to judgment for holding kind of incorrect opinions when they're old enough to know better. But when you're relatively young, I think people should be free to kind of express opinions without, you know, overdue condemnation or judgment. So I think we do need to personally, I think, you know, it's probably shared by a lot of people that we've definitely swung too far in terms of, you know, taking offense we need to find some way of kind of, you know, saying that it's acceptable for people to offend other people in society. That doesn't amount to, you know, a physical harm, or it can't be equated to the other forms of harm that, you know, people talk about.
Is part of that because, I mean, again, maybe a cultural shift where we now treasure feelings over facts?
Yeah, I mean, that's another kind of background trend, if you like, this move towards a sort of emotionalism as a foundation for what's valuable in life. A historian like Yuval Noah Harari has written about this, how we've kind of moved towards feelings really as the primary judgment to what's right and wrong. You know, previously we might have looked at a holy book or asked what a religion said, or you know, in the age of the Enlightenment, we'd have tried to look at philosophy in terms of what rational, moral philosophers might have said about what to do in any situation. But now we've kind of, you know, thrown away a lot of that and have kind of settled on feeling emotions as a primary guide. Now it's, you know, emotions are good and they can be a very good guide in certain respects. It's important to be in touch with your emotions and be empathetic. But sometimes, you know, emotions aren't a great guide on their own towards, you know, what is necessarily right and wrong. And you know, just for someone to say, you know, I find that wrong because I find it offensive, I'm emotionally harmed by it, that's not really an argument. It would never have been considered a basis for, you know, introducing that in a debate, in an argument in previous generations. I don't think that's necessarily right to exclude emotions from debate. You know, it's
but it's not
you have
the,
to,
the
you have to acknowledge.
Not the, yeah, it's not the be all and end all. Joe, my feeling is that you've done an excellent interview today. Thanks very much for giving us some of your time. That was Joe Humphreys there, columnist with the Irish Times.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.